This is a podcast from ABC Overnights. Here's Trevor Chappell.
It's 70 years since School of the Air started.
Mrs. Gibb gives the call to pupil Johnny Farger.
At RH Plant. Good morning, Mrs. Gibb. Mrs. John speaking. High and low, a boot and a shoe and a slipper lived once in a cobbler's road. But the boot and the shoe would have nothing to do with the slipper, because he was low. Over.
Thank you very much, but you said that very nicely indeed.
98 Werta Luna, are you there, Jane? Over.
At 98, I'm sorry, Mrs. Gibb, I've called for Jane. She's still out riding. She's very naughty, I know. Over.
Thank you very much, Miss Gray. Well, I'm sorry she's not there at the moment, but we'll call back in a few moments.
Tanya Heaslip is the author of the first School of the Air and first School of the Air student to go on to graduate from law school in the Territory. She has three books, Beyond the Alice, An Alice Girl and Alice to Prague. Good morning to you, Tanya.
Good morning, Trevor. Lovely to talk to you.
At the end of that little bit of School of the Air, there was an explanation that the student wasn't there. She was off riding, but she'd be back in just a little while. Was that a frequent thing?
No, yes, absolutely. Bush kids live to ride, and when you're a bush kid, you are the staple workforce for the station. So in our case, Dad had us out riding, mustering cattle, working cattle whenever we could. So we were always pulled out of school, and we could well be out there when School of the Air lessons were on. And it wasn't even that we were being naughty. It was that Dad had us out there and we had no choice.
When you say that the School of the Air was there, so was it something that you could do, that it was an option, or was it significant to the education and what you learned?
I think it's probably both. We did correspondence school from 7:30 in the morning until 1 each day. That was the fundamental form of schooling where we learnt the three R's. It was all written work, and it got sent away to South Australia every 2 weeks to be marked. And that was non-optional. And then for half an hour each day in the middle of that, we had a half an hour class with our School of the Air teacher. Each grade had a class. So grade one started and grade seven was the last one in the morning. But that one you could sometimes miss. Whereas School of the Air, even if we were dragged out to work by Dad, we had to go back and do our lessons on the weekend. School of the Air, if you missed out, sadly you missed out, because it was just about half an hour each day over the radio.
So was part of that then, I mean, I understand the significance of it for it education-wise, but it was also a connectivity was important?
It was so important, which is how it all began. Adelaide Nietzsche was this extraordinary woman back in the 40s, an educator who saw how isolated children were in the bush, how terrified they were of adults. And she discovered this when she went out with John Flynn on one of his medical missions. And so she worked tirelessly for about 5 years to come up with the idea of educating children over the air, to give them something in addition to correspondence school, so that they could connect with other students and a teacher. Even if they couldn't see them, they could hear them, and that would be a start.
So that means that it was initially done on two ways?
Yes, it was all done on two ways. It's only in very recent years that that's changed, so when I did it, it was all two-way radio.
Because it's wonderful with two ways, and you hear this in the conversations from that little grab and saying over at the end of each little bit so people knew that they'd finished talking. And I guess that was something mastered by children very early.
Very early. And one of the main reasons you had to do it was static was really bad. And so also not only to let the teacher know that you'd finished so that she could jump in or other children could jump in, but so that if your voice got drowned in static somewhere, that you heard this little over, you also knew that was the end. So we mastered it very quickly, and we'd start with, oh, good morning, Mrs. Hodder from BJD. This is Tanya Heaslip at Sierra Vic Uniform. Over.
So you give your call sign. So did each, yep. I would presume each of the stations had their own call sign.
Yes. Yes, and you can hear that with the teacher in that little grab you did. They had the little Hagen boy with his call sign. So, yes, as was Sierra Vic uniform, and we knew that and how to say over as so quickly as we could say anything else, really.
Was that something, though, that a lot of the kids knew how to use two ways anyway, because it was important to learn on the station for other reasons?
Maybe not initially, because the parents had control of the radio, a bit like a telephone in a house. So the parents usually had control when there was one telephone. And so the parents would go on for the medical sessions in the morning, and then in the afternoon sometimes people from the stations could all get on and talk. The kids were dissuaded from being part of that. That was all grown-ups' business. But they had their magical half an hour later in the morning with School of the Air. So that's really all they did initially until they, you know, well, when we got a bit older, we'd sometimes try and bust in on the adult conversations in the afternoon if we wanted to talk to our friend on the nearby station.
Laurie, good morning.
Oh, hi. We were very young when we went into School of the Air, but it was a little bit different in that we didn't have a two-way radio. We actually had to stand on chairs because the phone was on the wall and actually listen on the phone, and it was my brother, my sister and I, and you could imagine how, you know, shoulder to shoulder that was. It was really funny because it was about who they would speak to one or the other of us and tell us what they were going to do and what we were doing and all of that sort of stuff. And then we'd get the lessons and that in the mail and have to send them back. And then next day or a couple of days later or whatever it was, they would actually get on and tell us what we did right and what we did wrong. And we used to have to sit in the kitchen area around the kitchen table, and then when the workers had come in from outside, we would have to stop. So we would have morning tea, same as the kids do at school now, and then we'd have to go back and get stuck into our lessons again.
Hey, what year would this have been, Laurie?
Oh, gosh. I would have been about 7, and I'm 77 now.
Okay, and when you were doing that, how remote were you? Where were you living?
Well, we lived on a dairy farm on the Atherton Tablelands, but there was no transport into the school.
Actually, go on.
So we didn't have a way of going in and getting into a school. And it was only when someone bought a panel van type vehicle and put cushions on the floor that we actually ended up going to a school. And that was our first bus, as we called it. Now the transport department would probably have a fit.
That's true. Laurie, thank you. Because, Tanya, we associate remote learning and School of the Air with very remote areas, but when it would have first started, those remote areas may not be as remote as we think of now.
Well, that's a great story. I've never heard of children studying over the phone, but certainly with the two-way radio, they were for remote areas, and they started with the pedal wireless. Alf Traeger created that back in the 20s, and then the two-way radio. So I don't know about areas closer to town, but certainly in the outback it was all two-way radio because you couldn't get anywhere, and that was our lifeblood to the outside world. And we didn't have a phone either. That was it.
Tanya, when you take a look at that, I mean, just as you say that, that was it. There was no telephones. I know that when I was working in Marble Bar on stations, there were no, and a lot of the stations there, and also on remote mines and exploration camps, there were no, right, you'd have to do two-way, and you'd do telephone calls via two-way, which was weird as well. But is that isolation still an issue? I guess they can now use the internet, and there are other forms and ways of being able to operate.
School of the Air today is just top shelf innovation, really. They've gone from two-way radios to using computers. So now kids, as long as they've got a satellite, they can reach at home. They have the internet set up so they can just, you know, a bit like doing Zoom, I guess, or Skype, they just call in and they can actually see their teacher and they can see their classmates. And they can see the words their teachers are referring to, and they can play games and do art because they can actually see what's happening at the other end, and their teacher can see them. So it's come such a long way. We thought ours was fabulous, but today, as long as the satellite's working, kids just have this wonderful connection, and they couldn't be living, you know, 600 kilometres to the west or the east or the north or the south of Alice Springs, which is, you know, where School of the Air began, and that was my School of the Air.
Tanya, why did it start in Alice Springs? What was it about Alice Springs that made it the pivotal place for it to begin?
Well, again, Alf Traeger and John Flynn, who worked so hard on the medical mission and became the mantle of the outback in spreading the opportunities for health through the Royal Flying Doctor Service, had their base in Alice Springs. So it was when Adelaide Niewiecki, this extraordinary woman, and you think back to the time, she was in her 60s or 70s, a retired educator, single woman, and off there bravely marching around the bush, you know, not really done back in the 30s and 40s, but she went to Alice Springs after she'd had these experiences seeing children run terrified from her and the other new adults in their world. And she was sitting in, listening to, she was sitting in the Royal Flying Doctor Service, listening to the doctors speak to women out on stations, taking their medical issues and giving them advice. And she thought, well, if you can do it for medicine, why can't you do it for education? And so they had it set up in Alice. So that's where they started using the Royal Flying Doctor Service base.
You mentioned that the lessons were half an hour. In that case, what were the things that they chose to do? Because we heard some poetry that was done on that little grab earlier. Was it that sort of thing that could definitely be interactive instead of doing maths?
Yes. We did a lot more fun things, which is why we really loved it. You know, as I said, correspondence school was very much the 3 hours. And with a School of the Air, yes, our teacher would often recite something to us, and we'd have to practice writing it down and reading it back. Or sometimes she'd give us very simple maths exercises that we'd have to do. But very often we'd do reading from our books and we'd do plays. And the School of the Air would send us out, say, a book of plays and poems. And we'd sing as well. And every Monday the School of the Air would begin with assembly. And our teacher would bang away at the piano and we'd all stand up wherever we were out in the bush and sing God Save the Queen. There'd be all these kid voices bouncing through the static. So we did lots of music, theatre, poetry. It was very much like play. It was the closest thing we had to play in our lives.
I wonder if that's where the later on the concept of sing, sing, sing started that the ABC did.
Possibly, very possibly.
It was weird singing to that box. I've got a text here, Tanya, that says, growing up we watched Sonny Hammond use School of the Air regularly on Skippy, which is true, Graeme. For many of us, that's where our understanding of what School of the Air would have been like, Tanya.
Well, I didn't ever get to watch Skippy, of course, because not only did we not have a telephone, we didn't have a television. So I was like a whole generation of kids that missed out on Skippy. So until this moment, I didn't even know that School of the Air was on Skippy. So that's a really interesting thing to hear and to learn.
Oh, well, that was big on Skippy, anyway.
Was it?
Hello, Laurie.
Oh, how you going, Trev?
Good, Laurie.
Yeah, my family had a bit of a history with the School of the Air. Connects to the Broken Hill Fire Doctor base.
Yep.
And my younger sister, she actually was a student at School of the Air. And in 1954, when the Queen visited Australia, she was at Broken Hill. They took her out to the Fire Doctor base. And she spoke to my sister over the air during a School of the Air lesson.
Did they have special guests often, Tanya?
Well, we did. Well, not when I was there, I have to say. I don't ever recall a special guest, but the Queen did come to us. Maybe it was the same time frame, and she came to Alice and she went out to one of the cattle stations and saw a lesson happening there. But after I left in the 80s, Charles and Di came, their first trip to Australia, and they came to Alice as their very first stop on that trip and sat in on a broadcast, which you can see. It is just gorgeous to watch. You can just Google Charles and Di, Alice Springs School of the Air, I think March 1983, and it brings up about a 3-minute clip. And it's just gorgeous as the static. You can hear the nightmare of the static. And poor Charles and Di, they can't understand a thing. And the teacher has to, and he very calmly and cheerfully relays the question. And you see poor Di, her face is getting redder and redder as she tries to work out what she's meant to do. So you can actually hear how difficult, even in 93 it was, 83, sorry, to break through that static. But that was very exciting, and I was so sad to miss it. I'd already left, I'd gone to boarding school, and I was at law school then, but I was so sad to miss that.
The school of the, I mean, that grab that I played a little bit earlier was very clear, but it took a little bit of finding because there is a lot of static. Did that make things difficult?
Yeah, it was so difficult. Static was driven by the weather conditions on a daily basis, and some days would be quite calm and you could hear kids everywhere. On days where the weather wasn't good, particularly in specific areas, or where somebody didn't have a very strong connection anyway, you couldn't hear those students at all, or their attempts to speak would get drowned out by static. The Royal Flying Doctor Service Base had the strongest reception, and so you could almost always hear the teacher, but she couldn't always hear us, and very often we couldn't hear the other kids, which was always a great show because we couldn't see them, but at least hearing their voices was always so much fun.
Sonia, did you establish relationships with any of the other kids that you listened to on School of the Air, or was it only that you listened and spoke to them during that process or that time?
No, we did. It was a bit of a two-step process. The first was, I think kids are just drawn to other kids because we're of the same, well, for us, we had the same background. We had no other kids in our lives. So even though we couldn't see them, I'd paint faces around their voices so I could imagine what they looked like. And so we'd become great friends. And as I said earlier, one of the girls, Janie, and I became such besties, even though we'd never met, we were always trying to break into the adults' conversations in the afternoon and talk about our horses. But then School of the Air had this very innovative idea of what they called get together, and once a year, all the kids came for a week in the school holidays in August into Alice Springs, and we'd all stand there clutching our mother's skirts because it was one thing to talk over the radio, another to be there face to face. But by the end of that week, we'd all unclutched and got to know one another. And those relationships today are still as strong as ever. Janie, my first ever bestie, lives in the States, but we talk all the time over the phone or Skype or Zoom as we had ever done. Another girl, Lee, lives on the other side of Australia. She's in Alice this week. We're catching up. Those ties are there forever, I think, and we always greet each other with our call signs. It's just sort of mandatory. It's hilarious.
Because we just heard about Broken Hill there. Did it always just come out of Alice Springs, or later did it get distributed to different places around the country?
Later. It began in Alice, and I can't remember when Broken Hill and Port Augusta began, maybe about 5 or 10 years later. They had to try and get it right here in Alice. It took quite a bit of time. They started out of the base, and then they had to do trial runs, what kind of a classroom would work, the sound, the quality, etc. So it probably took 5 years to tweak it. I'm not sure, but it was probably 5-10 years. Not that much longer, because once they realised it was working, they wanted to roll it out to other isolated places around Australia.
Let's take a look at what you mean by isolation. How far were you from your nearest so-called neighbours?
Probably about 70 miles. We lived in one of the... our station was north of Alice, but one of the closest ones in. But the furthest... Janie, my best friend, she lives 700 miles south of Alice. So she was right on the edge of the radius. So it was a radius of about 700 square miles. And, between 70 to about 150 miles from each station was the norm.
So that's why there was a need to establish other ones, because if you had a 700-mile radius, then there was a need to be able to pick up other kids in other areas.
Exactly. It could only do that 700-square-mile radius because they didn't have the technology to go beyond that. So that's precisely, why they went. And they looked at all the other areas that were the most needy and wanting.
Because there would have been areas in northwest of Western Australia and central Western Australia that would have been incredible, like in need as well.
There were, and North Queensland as well. And I don't know the names of those School of the Airs, but I know that they exist in our sort of stratosphere. Port Augusta and Broken Hill were the main ones that we knew of.
Cherry, hello.
Oh, hello there. I actually used to be an actor with the Australian Broadcasting Commission, and that was in Tasmania. And I have the contracts here, some of them, and we would broadcast for 7ZL and regional stations. For instance, we'd have History 3 and 4, Elizabeth, Sister Elizabeth Kenny, and the fee was £2.06. It was great fun. It was our bread and butter for actors in those days. And we also did a series called Tiger in the Bush. Mm. And there were just so many. It was, and that was for all the 7ZL and regionals.
Sherry, thank you, because what we should distinguish between here, Tanya, is programming that was made for radio that would then be broadcast into schools, of which I guess Cherry's talking about, and School of the Air, which was a slightly different thing, Tanya.
Mm. We made all our own entertainment, and Mrs. Hodder in the studio, as I said, banged out God Save the Queen on the piano, and every now and then she would also bang out other songs on the piano that we could sing along to. Flash Jack from Gundagai was one that I remember. And we had a few other, perhaps Australian bush ballads, Banjo Patterson and Lawson and the like, set to music, all songs that we could somehow connect to because they involved horses or dogs or bush rangers. But that was it. We made all our own entertainment. And I think it's why it was so much like theatre, because we, in fact, were the actors as well.
So did you literally get sent scripts out and everybody had different roles to play?
Mm, yeah, the School of the Air was so innovative. They'd do all sorts of different things. They'd send us those songbooks, and then they'd send us poetry books and play books. And, yeah, so you do plays with each child playing a different role. So you can imagine with the static how that worked. And sometimes you couldn't hear anyone and you'd hear Mrs. Hodder coming in. Well done, Jamie, down there at Delta Downs. Right, I think we might move on to the next character, ... over.
Oh, so we get broken up that way. It's not as if they float on from each other.
No.
And we get broken up with people being told it's your turn to say your line now.
Yeah, and then when we got really good, so we could practice. So this might go on for 3 weeks, and then we'd have a little production and the parents could listen. And ideally it would flow, but there'd always be stage fright somewhere, or the static would gobble up someone, or someone would forget and Mrs. Hodder would have to come in and prompt. But you could get something flowing reasonably well, and I think it was very music. It must have been very funny for the adults.
I love it. A text saying in 2003 I visited the School of the Air in Alice Springs. They were more advanced in technology in the major cities. Satellite technology brought audio, video and internet to very remote students as long as they are on satellite, says BT.
Yeah, that's right. I think I mentioned near the start that have satellite now, we'll travel. School of the Air here is just amazing. I go in quite a bit because I'm just passionate about it, and they have lots of tours there and often go and talk to people and tell them those stories of the early days here. And even I can't believe the technology, and people are really stunned when they see now what is possible with satellites. Of course, the satellites have to work. As I said, if the satellite goes out, there goes your whole day. But if it works, yeah, you can see, you can hear. There are so many wonderful opportunities now for kids in the bush. They still can't actually play for real. They can't talk for real. You know, you can't touch your friend, hold their hand, give them a hug, but you can see them, which is such a great step forward.
Can't do that in capital cities, some of them at the moment either.
Well, no, exactly. And interestingly, School of the Air in Alice Springs last year was inundated with queries from all over the world people ringing in saying, look, they had people from Switzerland, from England, from Africa and the States asking for help, asking for advice. How do you remote school?
And that's, I mean, what a wonderful organisation to contact, because they've been doing remote schooling for 70 years. And I guess they would have been able to impart a whole stack of knowledge.
Absolutely. They go, oh, ho-hum, this is completely normal. Yes, we can help you. So lots of tips and ideas. And interestingly, that these queries have come from all over the world, where people everywhere are struggling with lockdown and how do you educate children. But for us here, when I say us, School of the Air here in Alice, and for the students who went through it, it's remote learning is the most normal way. I found face-to-face learning in a classroom when I finally had to do it in high school when I got sent south, terrifying. You know, there were real people there and I had to follow classroom etiquette, which I didn't understand. So remote learning for us is absolutely the norm and very comfortable with it.
We're talking this morning about the School of the Air. It's been 70 years since it began, and that'll be recognising those 70 years of School of the Air all of this year. Tanya Heaslip, author and first School of the Air student to go and graduate from law school in the Territory. Her books, Beyond Alice and Alice Girl and Alice to Prague, joins us on the program as we take a look at it. We've got lots of people, a few people ringing in now, Tanya, so we'll take some calls. Hello, Ruth.
Hello.
Yes, Ruth.
I worked at the correspondence school, which was another aspect of teaching the children out in the outback.
And what did you do, Ruth?
I was actually working where they typed the lessons that were then printed and sent out.
Oh, okay. Tanya, do you know about correspondence school?
Yes. So I mentioned at the start that we had correspondence lessons every day. They were the 3 hours that we were provided with. And that the School of the Air was just the fun bit. So, yes, correspondence school was the fundamental basis for the learning of reading, writing and arithmetic. And we got ours out of Adelaide. So the School of the correspondence school in Pennington Terrace in Adelaide would send up sets of lessons that lasted for 14 days and we'd have to do a day's worth each day. And as I mentioned, if Dad would take us out to the stock camp in the middle of that to muster cattle, we'd have to come back and do those lessons on the weekend. And we'd have a 14-day turnaround. Then they'd be sent back to Adelaide and we'd start on the next lot and our marked lessons would return maybe 2 to 4 weeks later, depending on the trains and whether they could get up. So you could imagine how exciting it was. So it's a month later since you sent your lessons in and they arrived back and would rush to see if we'd got any gold stars and how much red crossing out there was, hopefully not too much.
Julie, hello.
Hi. I was teaching at a Anna station, I can't believe it's 20 years ago now, with a young lad who was 7 and his little sister who started what they call transition, but it's equivalent to kindergarten. And they had a demountable room that I lived in as well, and I used to teach them in there. And they had this 10-minute phone lesson every Wednesday, and I used to hear the phone ringing. I thought, oh, but by the time we dashed across to the homestead, we'd always miss the damn thing. So, but other than that, we were always doing. We did half hour in the morning of break in, and then we got our lessons once a month, and so we could work on it for all that sort of stuff. And we actually had some rain while I was there, and we happened to be doing frogs. You know, and I don't know whether you know that frogs can often live underneath the mud and the sand for.
True. Were you a governess, Julie?
Yes.
Yeah. Tanya, was there a close relationship with the governesses that were on stations with the School of the Air as well?
The governesses played a really important role. So in my case, which is the case with most bush kids, our mothers were cooking huge slabs of beef and potatoes for 20, 30 stockmen for each meal sitting. And they just ran. They ran from dawn to dusk, heaving big lumps of beef around. And so their role, their primary role was to feed the stockmen who were doing the stock work. So governesses in many cases, stepped in as like the mini mother, at least throughout the teaching. So they'd be the teacher for the morning, and then very often in the afternoon, they'd come out with us if we had to go mustering, or they'd help us at night, have a bath and get ready for dinner if mum was still getting the last of the beef. So very close relationships. They were part of the family, and they were usually young girls who came up from south, very often 18, 19, 20, not trained, not a teacher trained, but who had a genuine interest in children and wanted some adventure in the bush, and usually they got it in spades.
Yeah. Sarah, hello.
Oh, good morning.
Yes, Sarah.
I just wanted to say thank you so much for running such an important story, and School of the Air is so important to us families in the bush. I've got a story about my experience. I completed preschool to year 7 on School of the Air. I went through Derby and Catherine and then Alice Springs schools. But in preschool, I was learning to read Pam and Sam. And, of course, Mum was busy, as Tanya was explaining, and she was sewing. And anyway, so she was watching me, and she was pushing the material through the sewing machine, and she ran the sewing needle right up her finger. Anyway, so she was stuck to the sewing machine, and I had to, as a, you know, 4-year-old, get over to the radio so I could call the flying doctors. And Mum sat there at that sewing machine for 4 hours waiting for the flying doctors to come out and to remove her from the sewing machine. It was an awful experience, but that was just a day in the life of a working mother out in the bush and a student on School of the Air.
Hey, Sarah, could I say, what year was this you were doing School of the Air?
Oh, gosh, 78. That
and so how long were you with School of the Air? Because Tanya was talking about went for half an hour. Did it go for longer then?
You know, I don't really remember how long I spent on air each day in those days. By the time I finished School of the Air in year 7, we received half an hour a day. And, of course, that on the radio. And, of course, that's a really important thing to remember, is that parents play such a fundamental role, or played such a fundamental role, and still continue to do, delivering the education materials in the home schoolroom for students on School of the Air. So even nowadays, with technology where students are spending half an hour or an hour a day on the internet doing face-to-face lessons or on the telephone talking to their teacher, the delivery, of course, is still done by the governess or the home tutor, which is often the mother.
Sarah, thank you. Just on that, Tanya, so half an hour, did it increase from half an hour?
No. And in fact, I think when we were real littlies, it probably was less than that. We probably had 15 minutes, but by grade 5, 6 and 7, it was definitely half an hour. But that was all because they had to fit grade 1 to grade 7 into a morning. So they didn't have that much time, and it had to go after the medical session. And that extraordinary story about the needle in the finger.
Yeah.
And kids' resilience and mothers' resilience and the importance of the Royal Flying Doctor Service, that's just such a great example of how lucky we are to have it.
Anne, hello.
Hello.
Yes, Anne.
Oh, I'm just ringing to say my husband was the School of the Air teacher in Derby in 1963-1964. One of the features of that program was the calls, the song that he used to introduce it, which was the Baby Elephant Walk, which did have quite a powerful effect of rounding the children up and introducing the session. Complementing going the daily lessons was his trips out to the station for occasionally to see the children. And I remember once, though, at Fitzroy Crossing, John was and I were walking, and I noticed this child listening intently to John, and finally he plucked up courage to say, "Are you Mr. Thompson?" And it was one of his pupils. However, my mother got embroiled too. My mother came up to Derby to see me, and John invited her to see the School of the Air studio. And John was working, and in walked my mother, and he said to the students, "Ah, here comes Mother Duck," and sat my mum down at the desk, and she had to read a story to the children.
How wonderful. Tanya, did you meet your teacher?
I did. We had our get-togethers once a year, so that was a wonderful chance where all the kids came into town for that 1 week and we got to meet our teachers. We were terrified, but we were in awe as well, and I thought Mrs. Hodder was the queen. She sounded like the queen. I was absolutely convinced she must have been. I remember gazing up at her. She was very tall and she was a magnificent woman, and I really wanted to curtsy because I'd been told that's what you did with the queen. Sometimes they went out on patrol as well, as the lady just said then, and visited stations. So I probably saw Mrs. Hodder twice a year, and yes, loved her, loved her. In fact, I loved her so much. She encouraged me with my writing when I went on to become an author, and she died much too young, and her daughters asked me to give the eulogy at her funeral. Oh. And there was not, this place was packed, hundreds of adoring students, and not a dry eye in the house as we celebrated this amazing woman who, well, she changed my life with, you know, the chance to write and learn about all things creative, and she did the same for so many others. Such an important role School of the Air teachers play.
I wonder how many mentors there are from those people that were. Just very quickly, in 30 seconds, do you remember the music? Was there music that started your sessions?
Well, I mostly remember God Save the Queen. Sort of something out. Here Comes Brumby Jack. I remember that, but no, I don't remember what else we might have had.
Look, Tanya, it's been such a joy talking to you this morning about your experiences. Thank you very much for telling us about it today.
Oh, Trevor, thank you for having me. It's a wonderful thing to celebrate such a great institution, good old School of the Air.
Tanya Heaslip, author, and the first School of the Air student to go on to graduate from law school in the Territory. Her books, Beyond Alice, An Alice Girl, and Alice to Prague. This is Overnights with Trevor Chappell on ABC Radio.